Talking with TD.
Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee. The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes. Guess what, ladies and gentlemen? We are back from the bye week. I'm your host, Teron Davenport. You are now talking with TD. As always, we have an awesome show coming up for you. We got David James over there making it happen.
Yes, sir.
You already know what it is. NFL Nation, we always have the opposing team's reporter on this week, ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter Stephen Holder. And you know what else we do. Run TMC. We get a little stupid in there, but it's all in fun. That's what you got to do, right? It's not work if you're having fun. And I tell you one thing, it's not a job if you love what you do. And this right here, baby, is what I love to do. So I'm not working. But I tell you what we're going to open up with, because we have a lot to get into. But I want to open up with Delanie Walker, man. The guy they call D-Love. He officially retired as a Titan this week. And I tell you, there are only so many guys that come around like him, whereas it doesn't matter what the topic is. You ask him a question, you're not going to get that coach speak. You're going to get 100% realness. And that's something that I found out about Delanie Walker quickly when I came here. And he was always fun, and still is always fun to talk to. But you know, one thing that he has that I think is different from a lot of other players I've seen, the level of class. David, this guy came into that press conference.
Mm-hmm.
He shook literally every hand in the room.
That's you don't see that at all with like a lot of NFL players at all, like professional athletes in general.
Every hand in the room he shook, even the ones like Sam Phelan with A to Z Sports. Like he mm-hmm. had no clue who he was.
Yeah.
Shook his hand. That impressed me. Really, really impressed me. But the other thing that I really like is in watching those videos, how many guys said that he was one of, if not the best. Taylor Lewan, I love you, he said. I love you. You're the best teammate. And he said, this is talking about high school, college, pros. It really was a huge impact. I remember talking to Jonnu Smith about Delanie a lot of times and just how, you know, Delanie was able to just kind of like impart so much wisdom on him. And he always, you know, spoke about how much he appreciated and how much, like, from the start. And Delanie said it too, like when they drafted Jonnu, it wasn't on some, hey, you come here to take my job, so I'm a sabotager. It was on some, yo, you the youngin' around here, you the young boy, I'm going to help you out. And that's exactly what he did. And now Jonnu, you know, has gone on to bigger and better things with as far as financially, you know, with the Patriots. Hopefully, you know, for his sake, he can get the statistics and stuff back on track. But nevertheless, it's cool to see a guy who has an impact like that. And it's funny, people don't realize when Jonnu first got to the league, he was a kick returner. You know, we're talking about a 6'2", 240-pounder returning kicks. But you know why he was able to do that? Because he had that speed, and he would catch it and hit it and be gone. And he, you know, I remember him, Arnez Battle. Like, I was a 49er fan back in those days. So I remember, you know, D-Love coming. Him and Vernon Davis, they came together. So it was pretty cool. Dope story John Robinson had when he talked about going to Central Missouri and scouting him. And he was like, you know, if you would have told me that 17 years later I would be a GM and Delanie would be retiring, you know, and a Hall of Fame caliber player, he said, I would have told you were joking. You were lying. So, but that's how things work, man. It comes full circle, and that's exactly what it did for Delanie Walker. So definitely, you know, salute to Delanie Walker for being able to retire as a Titan, putting up the numbers that he had, and also making this franchise relevant. You know, he's a big part of that. You know, you look at him, you look at Derek Morgan, you look at, you know, Wesley Wood. I mean, we could name a whole lot of guys. Brian Arakpo, you know, Mariota, whatever you want, right, wrong, or indifferent, you know, you got to put him in there too. So here we are now at this point. But it was really cool seeing kind of like a changing on the guard, like a transition. What are you talking about, TD? Well, this is what I mean. I remember, last year watching this slick tight end at Maryland. And I remember saying, wow, he reminds me of Delanie Walker. And I said, oh, timeout. I can't do that. Like, that's too husky, too lofty. He reminds me of Jonnu Smith, too. And here it is. Now he's wearing number 85 for the Titans. Delanie Walker is still very much involved with the team, watching the team closely. Why not ask him what he thought of the younger version of him? Here's Delanie Walker on Chig Okonkwo.
I think for where he at now, he's doing really well. Obviously, every player can get better, and he will get better as time goes. He will learn the game a lot more, understand the concepts of what the coaches want him to do. The last game they played, he had that touchdown. You know, one thing I'll tell him, your knee counts as 2 feet. You know, so sometimes, you know, little things like that, when they hear from another player, you know, then that kind of resonate in his mind. So I'm excited. Hopefully I can, when I come to the game, I may say a few things to him. I haven't talked to him this year, but I like what he's doing. I see him getting on the field more, and that just shows that he's building his confidence. So I'm excited to see how far it goes.
There you have it right there, Delanie Walker. give a little coaching point, too. That touchdown, a would-be one he was referring to, was the one against the Commanders. D-Love watched the Conquo get his knee down, but that hand, I think it was the right hand, it went down. If he could have just, you know, put that knee down and just kind of like rolled instead of bracing himself, easier said than done, it would have been a touchdown. But, hey, they won the game. I wanted to transition to a Conquo because I feel, you know, one of the things you do during the bye week is you do a lot of self-reflection, right? That's what the Titans said that they were going to do. And they said they were going to figure out who needs to play less, who needs to play more. David, I'm going to just go ahead and say it. I'm going to go ahead and say it.
Say it.
Austin Hooper needs to play less. And Chig Okonkwo needs to play more.
Yep.
And this is the thing. I really thought that Hooper was going to offer a lot as far as working the middle of the field, being a safety net for Ryan Tannehill. I was wrong as rain on a Saturday.
Yeah, exactly.
The guy who is becoming a safety net for Tannehill, or like a go-to guy, I'm not going to say safety net, is Okonkwo. And this, ladies and gentlemen, you're not going to like this comment, but this is the result of a good job by Todd Downing. Todd Downing, if you watch, you'll see how he's lining Okonkwo up all over the place. They even had him in the backfield. You look at the, was it the touchdown? I'm trying to remember. It was the touchdown he had against the Colts. I'm sorry. I'm confusing two plays. It was the catch that he had to make it a first, to get the first down. He lined up in the backfield. And that's what I'm talking about. When I say the transition, the changing of the torch from Delanie Walker to Chig Okonkwo. Because guess what? I remember in San Francisco seeing Delanie Walker sometime. Heck, I used to do it in Madden, dadgummit. I'll put him at fullback. But I remember seeing him do that. And then also just seeing him line up all over the place because of such a vast skill set. And again, I saw a lot of Delanie Walker in Chig Okonkwo, and Todd Downing is doing a solid job of trying to. Now, can it be better? Yes. And I think that self-reflection tidbit, that's where you say, I got to do a better job getting him more involved and also getting him more snaps. That, I think, that statement by Mike Vrabel about figuring out who needs to play less and who needs to play more, that fully applies, in my opinion, to Austin Hooper and Chig Okonkwo. I'll say it. You know what I'm saying? I'm just going to, that's where I stand. Also, you have to look at how Chig Okonkwo is coming along as far as being able to have a better grasp of things, right? And it's just like, it's no different than when you're driving to work, right? It's your first day going to work. You MapQuest it, you whatever, Google Maps, whatever you do, you check it out to see how long it takes to get. Oh, okay, it takes me 25 minutes to get to work. All right, well, you know what? It's my first day. I'm going to give myself 35 minutes to get to work. After you start to do that and you know your route a few times, guess what? That 25 minutes to get to work turns to 20. is no different than when you're on the football field and you got a million things going through your brain and all these assignments, you're not going to play as fast as you're capable of. But we're starting to see Okonkwo be able to do that. And that's all because he's feeling more comfortable. I asked Ryan Tannehill about that. Here's what Ryan Tannehill had to say about Okonkwo progressing.
So far, obviously, made some plays for us the last time we played these guys. And his talent is showing. So there's going to be some situations where hopefully we can get him the ball. But I think that role will slowly continue to develop as the year goes on.
Day to day, are there things that you could pick up on that make you feel like, yeah, you know what, he's starting to understand this thing?
I think just if you look, take a step back and look at like where he started at and where he's at now, you know, you see the growth of when he came in and, you know, flashed for us a little bit in the spring and just has been steady for us, you know, throughout training camp up until this point. You know, he's taking advantage of his opportunities, which I think is huge. You know, we preach that all the time in this building, and when he's had opportunities on Sundays, he's made them. So that's what you love to see from a guy.
So that was Ryan Tannehill there. And I think what stands out to me is the fact that he's starting to target Chig more. And Tannehill is a heavy trust guy. Like, he's really big on trust. And if he has that trust in you, he's going to target you. And that's what you're seeing. But I figure, you know, if we're going to talk about how Okonkwo is able to play faster, the best way to do it, let the man explain it himself. Here's Okonkwo telling you, you know, how he is getting more comfortable and how that process has worked for him.
I honestly think so, because I felt like in this game, particularly when I was on the field, I felt very comfortable and very confident. Like, when I would hear the play call, I would get lined up, I would know exactly what my job is, and it was just playing unconscious and finally just getting out there and just going. A lot of times in other games, I'll go out, I know my job, but I'll still be thinking about it. So this game definitely was a big step.
So that right there, you notice what he said. Not having to think about it. He's just able to go out there and play his game. And that's what you're seeing. And the cool thing about this, like, I wanted to bring you multiple perspectives of it, right? We opened up with Delanie Walker just saying what he saw. Then we went to Ryan Tannehill saying how he's seen these things happening. Then we went to Chig Okonkwo explaining how it is happening. Let's wrap it up with his position coach about how he has improved. And, oh, yeah, a little more involvement in the red zone.
He plays with a great sense of urgency, and I think sometimes you just got to reel it in a little bit so that he's not out of control. We got to tighten up some things technique-wise in the run game. Obviously, he's got a great skill set in the pass game and plays with great explosiveness and speed. And you know, he's still a rookie. He's 5 weeks into his rookie year. He's got a lot of ways that he can grow, and you know, he's made good progress until this point. And I think by the end of the year, he's only going to get better.
What goes into it?
You know, I think it's a balance every week. You know, you're trying to master what we're trying to do offensively, and also try to prepare for the opponent that you're facing specifically that week. And sometimes guys come in and they're so focused on what their job is and what they have to do that oftentimes they lose sight of trying to attack the opponent they're going up against. And I think he's really progressed in that way, where he's mastered what we're trying to ask him to do offensively from a schematic standpoint. And now he can also turn, you know, his sights and set them a little bit on the opponents that we're playing and look at different ways he can attack the opponent. And that's going to be the evolution of any rookie coming into this league. It's learning what we're asking you to do from an offensive standpoint and then going out and using those tools to attack the defense that we're playing that week.
And how about the red zone involvement? That's something he excelled in, you know, camp, yeah. OTAs, et cetera. How are you seeing that start to really start rounding to shape?
Yeah, I mean, the more opportunities the tight ends get in the red zone, you know, the happier I'll be, that's for sure. And we got plenty of opportunities for those guys. And I think Ryan has a lot of confidence in Chig and in Hoop and in all our tight ends to go down there and make plays in the red zone. And, you know, every week it's going to be different, game plan to game plan, some of the schematic stuff we have up. But I'm confident the more opportunities that those guys get down in the red zone, they're going to come through and make a play.
Well, I tell you who had opportunities to score in the last two games in the red zone. That's none other than Chig Okonkwo. And you notice how he said that the progression, how it works, right? And you start to understand the full picture. And when you understand the full concept, it really allows you to do other things. And a couple notes here statistically, right? You talk about red zone. Well, Jonnu Smith, 2020, he had 8 touchdowns in the red zone. And that was, I think it was like 3rd among all tight ends in the league. It may even been 2nd. It was high, we'll put it that way. Another number, I think it's what, 75 touchdowns that Tannehill has had. 23 of them have gone to tight ends. So understand, the tight end position is very critical to this team's success. I think Okonkwo is a guy that is going to get more time. So I wanted to spend this segment, you know, talking about Okonkwo and just, you know, what he's able to do. You guys will see him in Whiteboard Wednesday, too. He was a part of the combination there with Kyle Phillips that, you know, I felt would work as well. So we're going to go ahead, go to a break, pay these bills. We will be right back with Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
There they go. All right, here we go. The lights dim. The music fades. You know what time it is. And now, at small forward for your Indiana Pacers, number 9, Derrick McKee.
And now, starring in The Color Purple, Danny Glover.
He said, "You gonna let that little nappy-headed woman talk to you like that?"
What did Dad say? Maybe even sweep out a caboose.
What's up, big dog? How you doing, man?
Hey, man, I'm coming alive. What's up with you?
I'm good, man. You coming to the game this Friday?
Yes, that is the plan. That is
for
definitely
real?
The plan. Yes, we.
Dude,
you it's know,
gonna be a barn burner.
That's the plan. We'll get into that off the air, but yeah, that's definitely the plan, man.
Absolutely.
Well, I think it's only right since we've worked so much to have this show feature Derrick Henry and have him introduce us. I think we need to get back and talk a little bit about the rushing attack because we kind of got away from that this season. So let's start this way, Chris. When you look at Derrick Henry and how he is coming along, like what are you seeing that gives you signs that Derrick Henry is coming back?
You know, just kind of looking at the first two games when he went against the Giants, he's running a little bit side to side. He wasn't making that one cut and go. And also, we already know the struggles of the offensive line. But just looking at what he did in the last couple of games, he's running with authority now.
Yes.
I mean, it's one cut and go. Even if there's nothing there, he's continuously falling forward and standing in front of the chain. So even though he had a slow start, and I think the reason why he had a slow start is because he didn't really practice that much in the preseason or play in any preseason game. Now he's getting rhythm. Now he's one cut and go. And also, it's not just the running game, but him catching the pass outside the running game. So, you know, everybody talks about running backs, you know, being a complete back. I'm not saying he's a complete back all the way. He's the best runner. But he's very, very close now, TD.
Yeah, he's working towards that. It's funny you mentioned that catch. I mean, or catching the ball, period, because that catch he had against the Commanders, I mean, we're talking about a hands catch, reaching out and catching 1 yard line, and then, of course, he – dove into the end zone or put the ball over to broke the plane. But tell me a little bit about how critical it is and how much of an advantage it gives you, like in that situation when you catch it with your hands and not with your body.
Yeah, because when you catch it with your hands, you got to remember that you're going to get hit.
Yep.
When you catch it with your body, then your body jolts forward and has the ball to lodge out. But when you catch it with your hands, now you have a chance to catch it and then tuck it away. I know that sounds, you know, a lot of football one-on-one and all that stuff. But it's very, very, very important because when you catch it with your body and you get hit, that ball's going to consistently pop out. Your hands is away from the body. You catch, you tuck it in, and that's what makes the catch.
Yeah, and it's muscle memory, right?
It's because absolutely.
I remember in school, they would always say, look it all the way into the tuck. And we would have catches, like soft toss catches, and you would catch the ball. You would stare at it all the way into the tuck.
Absolutely.
And it just becomes natural. Okay, catch and put it away.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where those type of drills come into play. And go figure, Tony Dews, shout out to Tony Dews, the
Absolutely.
Running backs coach, because that's what he works on with Derrick Henry every day, at least what we got to see in training camp. But let's get back to him just getting back on track as far as running the football. Are you seeing like a special type of push or anything up front, or what is really behind it?
I think the offensive line is getting better. I know there a lot of guys have been switching out and this and that. I understand the pass rush is a little whole different monster. But the one thing I love about the offensive line is they're staying on their guy. If they have to make a block, they're staying with their guy, and they're creating those holes. Then also when they're running the inside zone and outside zone, the offensive line is running to their gap. They're not blocking the guy. They're running to their gap, and it's allowing, you know, Henry to make that one cut and go. I know that sounds, you know, a lot of football talk, but that's kind of like exactly what it is. He's seeing the hole, and he's making one move and going. And if you look at the first two games, he was trying to go side to side to try to make something happen. And even when there's not nothing there, he makes the one cut and go, as opposed to it being second and nine, it's second and six. That's what makes the difference.
And that side of the Waffle House menu gets opened up, a whole side. You know what I mean? So it's a lot better when you're second and manageable, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm glad you mentioned the whole idea of putting your foot in the ground and getting upfield and just one cut and go. And that's something, if you know, you know, this zone scheme, as you know, it's designed, like those cutback lanes,
yeah,
are, it's funneled right into how things work. And I just love when, like, watching the end zone view of that, right?
Oh, yes.
And you just see everything, it's flowing left to right. And you see Derrick Henry stretch it.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden you see the crease opens up, right?
Yeah.
Foot in the ground, he's upfield. Yep.
But he's patient, though.
It's like tumblers to a lock. Like, you know how they show you the inside of a lock in those crazy, like, Willy Wonka-type movies? It's just like that. So you really, like, have to appreciate just the art and the timing of that.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, there's two things that's going on. Number one, he's got to trust his offensive line, and then he's got to trust that he makes the right read. Those are two things that are so important, because when you talk about a running back being patient, a running back taking his time, he's got to let the play develop. He's got to let the line get to their gap. If it's inside zone or outside zone, he's got to let that happen. And he's got to trust it. When he makes that cut in the outside zone, I'm gone, and let's go eat. Let's get to the second level and run through a safety's mouth. And that's exactly what happened.
Absolutely. Well, here's another thing also, just to kind of – we'll transition to the passing game. But, you know, as a receiver, right? You're lined up out wide. It's play action. You're running that glance route.
Mm-hmm.
What are you looking for, like, as you see the play develop? What tells you, like, oh, man, I'm about to crib this one?
Number one, it's what the coverage is. You know, whatever the coverage is, what is the safety doing, the free safety doing, and what's the corner doing? If he's shading inside, if he's head up, I got to run the proper route. What I got to do is get him off his spot, whatever his alignment is, get back on top of him and lie with my eyes and get to the glance right there on top of the route. So when I see the safety in the middle, you might as well stand up, because the band is playing, boss. The band is playing. Dun, 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 dun. Play ain't even started, because I know that if you play me a certain kind of coverage and that safety, that free safety is kind of cheating over to the left, I'm going to go get this thing in this six.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's just amazing how that all sets up, you know, from the play action, from watching the run fake and how much that works.
Yeah.
Another thing that the running the football does is it makes teams stack the box. So here's the deal, right? It was bye week, so I went on WKRN. I do like I think they call it TD's Take. Mm-hmm. And the last time I did that, I mentioned Chase Claypool. And I said he's the guy that they should trade for. Now, coincidentally, he had his best game as a Steeler this past Sunday, so I don't know if he's going to be available. But how much would a 6'4", 238 guy like him be perfect for a team that always faces stack box, one-on-one on the outside with no safety help? What are you doing? What are you doing from the rip?
Oh, huge. Because the thing about it, if they go cover one, when I say cover one, that's one safety and man-to-man across the board, and just say they bring a blitz, I don't even have to go through my progression. I just throw the ball, let him go get it, because he's big, physical. He went to Notre Dame. That's exactly what he did in Notre Dame. They just throw it up and let him make a play, because, you know, you're talking about a guy that, you know, I say 7 times out of 10, he's going to win the jump ball because he's that big and physical and he's got strong hands. So that will be huge for him, because you just talked about it earlier, TD. They're going to load the boxes up. Say they bring another safety blitz, or they have a, you know, a twist or a dog blitz. You got to get the ball that quick. You just throw the ball up and let him go get it and make some plays. That's what he'll bring to this team.
And see, this goes back to what we talked about last week with guys like DJ Moore. How a receiver can, because everybody says, oh, well, you don't need to get a receiver. You got to focus on the line. Well, guess what? Quick hitting plays gives the line less time to have to protect the quarterback. So
absolutely,
it does help.
Yeah.
It does help. And speaking of that, we'll move to the Colts. Because what the Colts did last week, they shifted things around on the offensive line. They got the Kelly brothers, right? Dennis and Ryan. They have them in the lineup. But Alec Pierce, Michael Pittman.
Yes, sir.
We just went over catch and throw, jump it up, let them get the rebound off, tap glass.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on these guys and how the Colts are morphing into a team that can be dangerous passing the ball?
I agree with you 100% because you look at the beginning of the season, they struggled a little bit. They were definitely trying to find their identity. You had Matt Ryan that wasn't familiar with those three guys. Now they're starting to build in confidence. And all you need, TD, is one play to build your confidence. And that came last week against the Jags when Pierce made that game-winning touchdown. That just built their confidence. You watch when they make that touchdown. Pittman's over there. Paris Campbell's over there. Doolin's over there. Congratulating him to say, man, you're becoming one of us. Does that make sense? When I say one of us, you're coming to this fold to make plays. So you have all those guys. You got Paris Campbell. You got Pittman. And then, hold up. Let's just rewind that again. You forget about the big, gigantic tight end.
Yeah. They got two of them now.
Two of them.
They're like Dale Davis and Antonio Davis. You know what I mean?
Yeah. he threw the ball 58 times last week, TD. 58 times, Matt Ryan, to get it to those dudes. So, I don't know who's going to be out playing corner for the Tennessee Titans, but they're going to have to really lock up this game, lock up those receivers.
This is one of those weeks where your focus has to be this. As a DB, we talk about as receivers securing to the tuck.
Mm-hmm.
As a DB, you better fight for that daggone thing to the
you
tuck.
Better.
What goes up must come down. So yeah, he could go ahead and jump up and get the catch on you, but he's gonna have to bring it down to the tuck. So
now hit it in the nose.
This one you gotta be punching that ball out, and I think that's the key for your Terrence Mitchells, your Roger McCreary. I like this matchup for McCreary because because he's a feisty, that's a feisty little dude. I told you what I told him at the combine, right? I said, man, if I practice against you, we'll fight every day.
Oh yeah, 100%.
Because he's feisty like that, so I like that matchup. You know what I mean? But you're right with those big tight ends. Also, I mean, that's a challenge. You saw what Mo Alley Cox? He had the game of his life against the Titans last time.
They're big. They're physical. They can run. I mean, even though the DB or the safety is on them, they're still making contested catches. So, Matt Ryan struggled against the Titans the first time. I'm waiting to see how he's going to play this game because now he's getting familiar with his targets that he has.
Yeah.
Once you get that camaraderie and familiar with your guys, man, that could be dangerous, man, because I don't know if Jonathan Taylor's playing or not, but if he plays, then that just adds more fuel to the fire. I don't know. So it's going to be interesting.
Yeah, it will be interesting. And, along with that, how critical is it for guys to match hands with the quarterback this week?
Say that again?
Matching hands with the quarterback. How critical is that this week when you know they're going to be throwing the ball fast?
I mean, you got to contest the catch. You got to get in their face. You got to disrupt everything. You got to be a disruptor, man. You know what I'm saying? So when those guys are catching the ball, you got just like what you said, you got to rip it out. You got to say, you know what? Even though you may catch the ball, I'm trying to get this ball out and create turnovers. So I hope that's what you were saying, but that's kind of where I'm going. But you just got to make sure that even though they catch the ball, rip that thing out. Because we always talk about DBs, they catch the ball, rip it out, so it still, prevents them from catching the ball.
Yeah, without a doubt. And see, this is my thing as far as matching hands with the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
This week it is important, and I'm talking about the guys up front.
Yeah.
You know who leads the Titans in pass breakups, right?
Oh, Tart. Oh, dude, he's funny as heck. Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a hooper. That's why his footwork. He was a hooper coming up, man. Big man with sweet feet, man. You love to see it. But even if you go back and you look at that Commanders game, like that Joker, he backpedaled and he literally transitioned out his backpedal and broke on the ball. And I watched the end zone view of that and I was just cracking up on it. But that's what you have to do, though. You have to match hands so you see that kickball drill, see how that thing could transfer over once again.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, because the thing about it is, I kind of got what you were saying now, is, you know, you want to, when you put your hands up and you match hands and you knock those balls down, it closes those windows for the quarterback to throw it.
Yep.
It closes those windows. So now if you're batting balls down, then he's going to have to take a deeper drop so
right.
he can see where the window is. So that's going to be beneficial, you know, to the Tennessee Titans front.
Yeah, and that's the thing. It goes back to, I remember, who was it? It was the Patriots game against the Titans. This is the one where they came here and the Titans beat them. It was the one where Kenny Vaccaro opened the game when he blasted James White. I mean, like, body rocked him. And that's when it was like,
body rocked him.
Wait a minute, Titans are here to play. Hold on a second. But I remember in that game, Brady went to do one of his quick timing type of throws. And I think it was Darren Bates.
Wow.
Matched hands with him. Mm-hmm. So he had to tuck it and regroup. And then I want to say it was Wesley Woodyard matched hands with him. Uh-huh. Bates got the sack. Uh-huh. And it was because Brady had to tuck it and regroup, because the passing lane, as you mentioned, just closed that window. And then he had to, you know, take a little bit more time to find another one. And lo and behold, that got a sack. So that's how, you know, all things could come together.
Yeah. And then another thing, too, TD, is a quarterback sometimes is not even throwing it to the receiver. He's throwing it to a spot.
Spot, yes.
So if he can't see his spot, that's what makes Brady tuck it away. That's what makes Ryan tuck it away, because they can't see the spot.
No doubt about it. And this message has just been brought to you by? We're looking for sponsors. So, you know, you want to put your name in there, holler at us.
Let's do it, man. I need to drive a car, man. If Lexus or Lincoln Navigator, hey, I'm ready to do a business.
Oh man, you going all the way. You couldn't even say like a Dodge. He went right to the Lexus of Lincoln. Hey, hot dog.
Call me up, baby. We do it. I'll be rolling.
Call me.
This is Chico Conquo, and I'm talking with TD.
All right, here we go. Back from the break. That's Smith and Wesson, you know what I mean? Let's get it on, because that's what the Colts and Titans are talking about right now. So what better way to lead into that than bring in my guy, man. It's part two. We just talked a few weeks ago. But ESPN, NFL Nation, Colts reporter, Stephen Holder. Stephen, what's going on, man?
Hey, TD, what's going on? Hey, this is a sneaky big game on the schedule this week. I'm telling you, I really think people are sleeping on this game.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I sent emails to, you know, me and TV work. You know how that works. I sent them emails just like, hey, man, listen, this is an AFC South showdown. This is for the top team in the division. It's a big game. So we'll see what happens, man. Hopefully – we get a little air time. I'm not going to hold my breath, but hey, if it happens, you know, let's go.
Let's do it.
So I guess let's start. Obviously, Jonathan Taylor is the big name with the Colts. I know he's missed the last couple of games. From your perspective, what's the latest on him?
Yeah, it's been hard to read that situation. And I am starting to kind of wonder about the severity of the injury. I really thought last week that he would play. I mean, he practiced on a limited basis Thursday and Friday going into last week's game against Jacksonville. And then on Saturday, he was ruled out. So it wasn't even a game time decision. So that caught me off guard a little bit. Now, he practiced Wednesday. He was limited some, but he did practice. And so we'll see. I'm done kind of making prognostications on this thing, because 2 weeks in a row, I was way off.
Yeah.
I don't know what to think anymore. I'm wondering if it's a high ankle sprain and maybe he's pushing through it. I don't know. I really don't know. All I can tell you is that they did get a surprisingly impressive performance from Deion Jackson behind him against Jacksonville. And he is apparently okay coming off a little quad injury in that game. So that at least some good news at running back for the Colts.
But do you think, like, with the magnitude of this game, and I know it's just kind of like shooting in the dark, so I'm not asking you, like, to make a Swami-like prediction. But, I mean, do you think because of the magnitude, this is – so you get swept by the Titans, that's going to be bad news for the Colts as far as trying to get to this AFC South title. So do you think with that being there on the table, do you think they may be a little more aggressive with getting Taylor out there?
I think that he's further ahead than he was this time last week. And so that's a good sign. And I think you're right. I think that the Colts understand where they are. I mean, Frank Reich made a good point, their head coach. He said, you know, this is going to be, I believe, their fifth division game already, you know, in week seven here, fourth or fifth division game already. So you're almost all the way through the division as it is. Mm. So I think they understand the importance of it. They've had two games against Jacksonville, split those. They've had one game against Tennessee and didn't come out with a win there. And they got a tie against Houston. So, you know, they've got one win in the AFC South right now, and that is not where you want to be.
Well, one thing you did discover without Jonathan Taylor, you discovered and you wrote about that, what this Colts receiving core is capable of doing, specifically Alec Pierce. Now, let me tell you, this is a guy that I love to watch at Cincinnati, and it's always funny because, you know, you had a thing where, okay, it's a white receiver, and you don't want to give him his props, his roses for his speed, but this guy has some jets with him, and he got some hops along with size.
Listen, he's playing basketball out there, okay? Telling you, he is basically playing basketball out there, and I love what he's doing, you know. But it's actually, I tell you, it's actually more than just his ability to go up and high point the ball. That's the beauty of it. What we're seeing is that he also is starting to run, I think, the full route tree. Mm. You know, he's starting to now make plays between the numbers. We know he can play outside. We know that. He has proven that in college, and he's already proven it at the NFL level. He's been doing it since week one. But what I wanted to see was, okay, can this guy go run a tough slant against man coverage and go get that ball in traffic and stand up to the hit that's definitely going to come? And he did that against Jacksonville at a level I have never seen him do it. I was really pleased by that. And I asked Frank Reich, you know, what do you think that adds to the whole, you know, sort of package? His ability now to maybe go inside and make plays. And he gave an interesting answer, and I agree with this, and you understand this as someone who played receiver. He said, you know, if you have a guy who is good on the perimeter and can go up and get the ball on the outside, but if that's all you can do, he says they can kind of pigeonhole you and basically play you against the sideline and not worry about you having to go inside. But now if you have to also defend him between the numbers, now he can hurt you anywhere on the field, and you've got to defend that guy differently. So that is what they're seeing in Alec Pierce right now. The key is to keep that passing game going against a really good front in Tennessee.
And what about, we're talking to Stephen Holder, ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter. What about Paris Campbell? It seems like the things are starting to line up, and he's not getting those injuries and he may be capable of an impact as well.
So it's been interesting. So Paris Campbell has played a lot of snaps this year. He is, I believe he's right behind Michael Pittman in snap counts among the receivers. Hmm. But the production hasn't really been there. So it's been kind of interesting to watch. But you saw him, I think, or really in the last couple of weeks, you're starting to see him, I think, find his way a little bit. And some of that is also developing some chemistry with Matt Ryan. You know, that's something that we lose sight of. You know, Matt Ryan's really in the beginning stages here. This is still early in his first season with the Colts. So, you know, they're still growing, and they're still kind of learning how to mesh and work together with each other. So I have to remind myself of that at times. And that's why I think every week you're seeing the passing game look a little more functional, right? And I think so for Paris Campbell, he's two things. He's getting more involved, and he's also playing with more confidence.
Right.
And there was a great example of that, of him getting a reception on Sunday and really going and finding the pylon and going for it and not being timid about that, you know, and playing with some aggression. That was, I think, really good to see and maybe a sign of more to come.
Now, when you look at, I mean, we looked at the running back, we looked at a little bit at the quarterback, the receivers, but I think another thing that's happening is this offensive line. We're seeing a shuffle. What is going there? I mean, Dennis Kelly, I guess, is the knee is good, and he's someone that's becoming a rotational piece. Is that the case?
Well, let's start with this. They've had a different offensive line lineup 3 games in a row, and not because of injury. That's just performance. That is not a recipe for success.
Right.
But it's really just an effort to try to find the right combination. So I like that they have not, just kind of gone with the flow. I like that they have said, no, it's not good enough, and we're going to keep trying until we get this thing right. And so they have, I think at this point, found something that is workable. And, yeah, you're right. Dennis Kelly, as of this week, he's listed on the depth chart as the starting left tackle. I never anticipated that, but I also knew that Matt Pryor, who was their starting left tackle, I knew that was definitely an experiment, and it didn't go well. It just didn't. And you can't have a guy out of left tackle that just doesn't have the ability to deal with speed, and that's what they had. They tried him at right tackle a couple of weeks ago. I think really there's not much difference, frankly, when you go up against teams with 2 speed rushers like Jacksonville. So that didn't work either. And so they've now moved into guard. And then I think right tackle with Braden Smith, he's starting to stabilize a little bit. He had been struggling, but he's playing better. And Ryan Kelly at center is also playing better. Quentin Nelson is Quentin Nelson. He's just been a little overwhelmed because the players around him have not performed well. And so that leaves us with left tackle, back to Dennis Kelly. They intended to use a rotation with Bernard Raymond, the rookie from Central Michigan, and Dennis Kelly. Well, they stuck Kelly in the game in the second quarter, and they just started rolling, and they said, well, we're not fixing it because it's not broke. So we'll see how it goes. They may continue to rotate, but I think Dennis Kelly for now has earned the right to stay there until he proves otherwise.
Very interesting. I have something coming, posting this week about Danico Autry. And one thing I found, like, he's not a man of many words, but he's actually kind of fun to talk to. Like, once you crack that shell, can you give me, like, what do you think of, what moment do you think of when I mentioned Nico?
Well, first of all, I love Danico, okay? Like, you're right about that, like, you stick a microphone in his face, and he's—it's not his favorite time of the day, right? That's not his favorite thing. But when you just kind of kicking it with him, and you just talking ball, like he gives you the real. Like he'll tell you, I would go over to him when he was in Indy, and if they're playing Team X, I'm not going to name names, but if they're playing Team X on a given week, I'll say, hey, what's the offensive line look like on tape? He'd be like, oh. Like, that guard is terrible. He's like, I got this guy. He'll tell me something like, oh, the tackles, they can't play. Or he'll give him props. He'll say, look, this is going to be a tough matchup. He says, but I got something for him,
Right.
So I love that about him just because, he just kind of just talk to you with his guard down and just give you the real so you know what you're looking for on Sunday. But anyway, what I thought that Danico Autry, at this front office of the Colts, the current front office, Autry was one of the best acquisitions I think they've ever made. And I know people might be surprised to hear that. People outside of Indy and Tennessee might be surprised to hear that because they don't know him.
Right.
But if you've watched this guy play, and I think the consistency is what I love, the consistency. He is not a guy who's going to go get maybe, 15 sacks, but I don't care about sack numbers necessarily. I care about pressure and the consistency of pressure. And he's a guy, he's an old school player who continuously gets pressure. He'll bull rush. He's got a little bit of a get off the line of scrimmage as well. So he has a nice, sort of a versatile set of skills that's really hard to deal with. And he is a physical player. He's the kind of guy, honestly, when you play him throughout the day, if you're an offensive lineman, you're going to be tired that night.
Yeah.
Because he's going to make you work.
Yeah.
That's what I see. And I love his game.
Yeah. He's one of those lunch pail guys. Like, you got to really, like, be ready for a day of work when you're going against him. You know, he told me that he said that really that bothered him. That hurt him that the Colts didn't bring him back.
Oh, it did.
He said, and I stopped after he said this to me, and I asked him again, because he said, man, it made me feel like I'm not good enough. I said, whoa, time out. You had 7.5 sacks, what, 20 over your time. You felt like you weren't good enough? He was like, yeah, I didn't feel like I was good enough. I just, like, that's really interesting to me, just how personally he took that.
Yeah, he's a humble guy. I like that about him. You know, he's never lost that sort of, you know, that sort of down-home Southern guy that he is, you know, and he's a small-town guy, and it's never really gone to his head. You know, I like that about him. Even when he was having success, you know, he never talked about himself, and he never carried himself in a certain kind of way. So I love that. He's just relatable and a guy you can kind of root for that way. And you're right, though. I was in touch with him and his representatives throughout, you know, the free agency process, and I really think they were taken aback by the Colts. The reality of this is that the Colts did not make very much effort to re-sign him at all.
That's cool.
At all. And I thought it was a little bit of a mistake at the time, and in fact, over time, now, I've realized it was even a bigger mistake than I realized at the time, okay? Now, they've moved on, and they have a decent little pass rush going right now. But, I mean, it has been a little bit of a struggle to get there. And they've had to throw money at that position as a result of that, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, they are also throwing draft picks. You got Deo Adebayo.
Yeah.
I always struggle with his name. But Deo, you know, has come in. And
had Adebayo.
Adebayo.
It doesn't sound like it looks at all.
Yeah, Deo Adebayo. That's it. He had a solid game against the Titans a couple weeks ago, but – I want to ask you about three defenders, status-wise. You look at Quiddy Pay, DeForest Buckner, I guess that elbow, he still was wearing that brace, I believe, and also Darius Leonard, surprisingly.
Yeah, so I think Quiddy Pay, I'm too early to say on him. I'm not really counting on him, but we'll see as the week goes on. I can't rule him out, but I certainly am not counting on him playing.
Okay.
So we'll see. He may be another week. But DeForest Buckner, that guy is going to be out there. Let me tell you, he's an Iron Man. He's missed, I believe, one game due to injury in his, I think, 7-year career. So he's not a guy who's going to miss time. I think he has figured out how to play with this big brace that he's wearing. You know, sometimes, you know, those things can be hard to kind of adapt to.
Right.
And so it took him a couple games, but I think he's got it now, and he's rolling. He had a really good week last week. Well, the last couple of weeks he's been good. They gave up some big chunk runs against Jacksonville, and that can't happen. But overall, I thought they were solid. The other thing, you asked me about Shaquille Leonard, Darius Leonard.
Oh, yeah.
Look, he's had a rough year, man. Rough year. Had the back surgery in the summer. And that lingered, comes back against, I believe, Kansas City in week 4, and immediately has just a really freak situation and breaks his nose and gets a concussion. I mean, it's just a nasty injury. But he has turned a corner, and he's in the mix. Got back to practice this week, and he's still limited, but I think he is in the mix, and we'll see if he gets cleared. He's chomping at the bit. And listen, this guy has played 2 quarters all season. That's it.
He's
ready to roll. He wants to be out there, and it'll be a football/medical decision. We'll see where it goes.
Yeah, well, you know, he is out there. That's always pay-per-view. We got two. We're going to get to see a couple pay-per-view matchups if everything falls right. You got Quentin Nelson and Jeffrey Simmons, but you could now mix in Tierre Tartt and Autry in there too, and then. You got Darius Leonard. Oh, dang, I said it again. It's like saying the San Diego Chargers, man, Oakland Raiders. You got Shaquille Leonard.
Listen, I do it all the time.
Okay. I appreciate it, man. You got Shaquille Leonard and Derrick Henry. So those will be fun to watch. And then, I mean, you got you and me too, right? You know, a couple smooth brothers
dynamic
just doing
duo.
What we do, man, you know.
That's right. Fun fact is that I don't know the genesis of this, but Shaquille Leonard and Derrick Henry they're boys too. Like
yeah.
They have apparently a pretty close relationship. So that's always a good matchup because, you know, there's some trash talk at stake there as well. So, you know, that offseason trash talk is what's hanging in the balance. So I would love to see those two go at it.
Yeah, for sure. The pride is alive right now. So we'll see how that thing works out, man. Listen, when you get to town, you already know what to do, man. We'll link up. I appreciate you coming on, and safe travels, man.
Okay, I appreciate you, man. Big game on tap.
So appreciate Stephen Holder for coming on. Always good to talk shop, man. We could get a little long-winded, but that's just, you know, a couple friends getting together like we're at a bar somewhere or something, talking what we talk, man. So definitely appreciate ESPN NFL Nation Colts reporter Stephen Holder coming on. Shout out to Chris Sanders, another one, get a little long-winded. You know, we let it go, man. But I wanted to bring you guys in-depth discussion about the wide receiver position, how it's going for the Colts, and also how it should go for the Titans. We'll see what happens as things continue to go along. And, oh, yeah, I didn't forget about my guy David James over here making this thing work, man.
Yes,
appreciate
sir.
You.
Always.
And, hey, man, this is what we do each and every week. So definitely continue to tune in. Man, I can't tell you guys enough how much I appreciate each of you for tuning in. You know, check us out, Google Podcasts, Spotify, iTunes, everywhere you get all your podcasts. Search Talking with TD, then subscribe, rate, review. We appreciate you.